Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Because of this past weekend's events, we've decided to postpone today's One Planet show to open the lines to find out what you make of this political moment. Early Saturday morning, a man pretending to be a police officer shot and killed Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark in their Brooklyn Park home. State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette were also shot in their home, but they survived and are in stable condition. Democratic Representative Melissa Hortman was a champion for the environment, education, reproductive rights, immigrant rights, and workers. She served as Speaker of the Minnesota House from 2019 to May of this year, just last month. In a recent interview with the Minnesota Reformer, she said, "The most rewarding piece of legislation we passed is paid family and medical leave. An average person can take time, whether it's to take care of somebody who has cancer or to take care of a new baby. People should not have to choose between a job and recovering from illness." The Hortmans leave behind two children. Authorities arrested the suspect last night. Officials say he left a list of politicians, including U.S. Senator Tina Smith, a Democrat from Minnesota, abortion rights supporters, doctors, and Planned Parenthood officials at the scene. He also had No King's papers in his fake police car, according to Fox 9. Here is the Reverend William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, speaking at a No King's rally on Saturday in Philadelphia.
By 1777, there were as many as 14,000 British troops in occupying Philadelphia. More than a third of the population of the city, because everyday people had linked up with everyday people in other colonies to declare their independence from tyrannical rule. Two and a half centuries later, a would-be king has ordered U.S. troops to occupy Los Angeles and to parade down the streets of Washington, D.C., to parade like the North Korean forces of Kim Jong-un. But we are here to say, no, that is not who we are. We are gathered in Philadelphia and in 2,000 cities and towns across America today. We are everyday people of every race, creed, and community and political affiliation, uniting in the great nonviolent tradition of those who came before us to demonstrate a better way, a way we have learned through this nation's painful struggles. The struggles that have taught us that we either go forward together or backwards divided. We are not a people who bow and give total allegiance to any ruler or policy, because bowing is not freedom and bowing is not in our spiritual DNA. We cannot be who we were made to be unless we are free. We are not a people who give loyalty to a king. No, we, the people of the United States of America, are at our best when we are striving to be united by our commitment to liberty and justice for all.
That is the Reverend William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, speaking at a No Kings rally on Saturday in Philadelphia, where 100,000 people turned out. More than 5 million people in all 50 states took to the streets on Saturday, according to No Kings organizers. People in large and small towns said they've never seen so many on the streets. San Francisco saw more than 100,000. Chicago saw 75,000. Organizers told Axios that smaller towns, such as Pentland, Michigan, reported 400 in a town of 800. As millions took to the streets, Donald Trump's military birthday parade rolled past sparse crowds, according to The New Yorker. It reportedly cost $45 million. So what do you make of this political moment, the political assassination over the weekend? Last week, we talked about California Senator Alex Padilla being thrown to the ground and handcuffed after he tried to ask DHS Secretary Kristi Noem a question. The massive protests we saw on Saturday. If you were on the streets and you'd like to talk about what you heard, what you're hearing in your communities, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Joining us is a reporter who has been covering Donald Trump for many years. David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist and best-selling author of several books about Donald Trump, including The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family, and It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. David K. Johnston is also co-founder of DCReport.org and professor of practice at the Rochester Institute of Technology. Hi, David. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, good to be with you again, Rose.
Well, it's great to have you, David. We haven't spoken since the election, and so much has gone on. So much is happening. Just it's hard to keep up. And I'm just wondering, given the many, many years that you've been at this, David, what do you make of this political moment? How are you analyzing everything that's happening?
Well, Donald Trump had declared himself to be our dictator on February 26th, something I've been warning since 2011 was his intent. He said on February 26th, he who saves his country violates no law. Now, that's a made-up quote that's been attributed to Napoleon Bonaparte and other people. But the point is, he was asserting that everything he does is lawful, which, of course, is ridiculous. A few days later, the White House, at three different social media sites, posted what is basically civil blasphemy in America, an image of Donald Trump wearing a regal British-style crown and with the caption, "Long live the king." Now, of course, the White House later said, "Oh, we're just trying to own the libs." If that's the case, you would have to say a bunch of small children, maybe junior high school age at the oldest, who are running the White House. And what I think is most significant, as Donald tries to consolidate power, get rid of inspectors general, remove contracting officers who question things like Elon Musk abusing his huge multi-billion-dollar federal contracts, calling out judges and suggesting they should remove from office and other actions, is that the response, even with the marches, has been ineffectual. We're seeing an ineffectual response. If you take the size of the crowds that turned out Saturday, they're huge. But even if you accept the $5 million figure, that's only a little more than 1.5% of the population, not nearly enough to really change things. And the Democrats just can't seem to figure out what to do, except if you sign up for things, flood your email box every day with requests for money.
I'm getting the texts. They're starting again. You know, David, I just wonder if we could, because we have time, I'm looking at the presidential results. So Kamala Harris got 75 million. Donald Trump got 77.3 million. Why do you think Donald Trump won?
Why do I think he won?
Yeah.
Well, a couple of factors. First of all, being black and a woman is, in America, to many people, a doubly unacceptable situation. I mean, we did elect a black man to the White House. She only had about 100 days to introduce herself to the public. And she was constrained on a number of issues by needing to be loyal to Joe Biden and his presidency, especially on Gaza, where I thought if you listened very carefully, she tried to make it clear that she would have a different approach, not allowing Netanyahu to do what he's been doing, which is a gross overreaction and killing of excessive numbers of women, children, elderly, and the disabled in Gaza, and withholding food and medicine. But remember, this is one of the closest elections in American history. I mean, it's not as close as Nixon and Kennedy in 1960. The margin there was about 118,000 votes. But it's only 1.5%, and Trump did not win a majority. He got 49.7% of the vote. The other important issue is that it takes time for economic improvements to work their way through the economy. So in 2023, that's the latest data we have, Rose, the incomes of the bottom half of workers, you know, the medians half make more, half make less. For the first time in more than 30 years, the incomes of the bottom half of workers rose at a faster rate than the top half, 20% faster rate. People didn't know that. The Democrats failed to get that out. They did not persuade people that the economy was getting better, even though all the data pointed to the fact that it was getting better. And The Economist magazine, a very sober, conservative British business publication, famously ran a cover story in October, last October, the envy of the world about how the U.S. economy had recovered so much better and faster than every other major country in the world. And then finally, the Democrats just didn't get the vote out. I mean, you win elections when people are registered to vote and then actually cast ballots. And the Democrats continued to pay consultants to buy TV ads, which lots of research has shown move about 1/3 of 1% of voters to change their minds, instead of pouring all their money into getting people to actually cast ballots on election day.
Well, to your point, David, 90 million people did not vote in this last election.
Right. Well, since 1788, the first U.S. presidential election, didn't vote has always won.
Right.
And one of the questions you need to ask yourself is, why did 3.3 million fewer people vote in 2024 than 2020? And if you add population growth, the vote really should have been up somewhere close to 7 million more voters. Well, we don't know yet. Political scientists are still working on this. The early reports have said a lot of young Black and Latino men turned to Trump because they liked his tough guy stance. He's not a tough guy. He's a weak little man, but he poses as a tough guy. But I suspect when we get full detailed reports on this, which will take another year or so, we're going to find out that a lot of people who are marginal propensity voters, people who are not likely to vote in most elections, said, gee, you know, I got real raises above inflation, my job's steady, the economy's getting better, what do I need to vote for? Trump's going to lose anyway, and I'm just going to stay home. I'm not going to take the time. If that turns out to be true, and we don't know, but if it turns out that that's true, that really goes to how the Democrats need to learn to do organizing. And it's astonishing, if you think about that, that the party that historically has represented the interests of working class people and unions really is very weak on organizing compared to the Republicans.
We're spending the hour with David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist and best-selling author of many books. He's written several books about Donald Trump. If you have any questions for David, if you'd like to talk about this political moment, what are your thoughts about where we are? If you were on the streets on Saturday and you'd like to share your experience, what are you hearing in your communities, at work, at home, about what we're dealing with right now? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's hear from Tim in San Francisco. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Well, hey, hello. Good morning. And hello, David. I love your work. Just wanted to say how oddly pleased I was to see so many people. I went to the beach before we wrote a big banner that said, No King. And that the blowback seems more intense than the last time, and it better be, because this is a full-on fascist takeover.
Tim, what did you hear from people? And what are your thoughts about just where we are politically? I mean, a political assassination over the weekend. The guy was just caught last night. The military parade on Saturday. I mean, what are your thoughts about this political moment?
Well, again, this is the moment to get out in the street. You can't cower at home. The things that they're doing are so illegal and just blatantly unfair that if you don't stand up now, when are you going to stand up? Right? We're going to take away the food stamps so Musk gets more money? It's not right.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. We've got a couple of people emailing us with photos of the protest signs that they saw over the weekend. David, what are your thoughts on this? Because, you know, you said 5 million in a country of, what, 350 million. A number of people in large and small towns say they've never seen so many people out on the streets.
Oh, I agree. I think that in many towns where I live now in Western New York, a number of small towns that are in red counties had very large turnouts. And I think that that's important and terrific. But you, the political science shows that you need at least 3.5% of the public to be organized and standing against a regime like that of Donald Trump. Well, 3.5% is more on the order of 10 million people, probably it's about 12 million people. And the demonstrations were nowhere near that. So there's got to be a lot more work done to get people motivated. Now, on the other side of this, if you have fallen into the trap of believing that all the news is fake, made up, et cetera, as Donald keeps telling his followers, and you only followed places like Breitbart, Fox News, One America, you would believe that Donald Trump is just doing great things left and right, and that they're rooting out fraud, and all those two-year-olds collecting Social Security who obviously are fraud are being pursued. By the way, those two-year-olds are getting Social Security because they're orphans. But there's so much bad information being spread in this country by fake news organizations, mendacious organizations whose whole mission is to lie, confuse, and distort. And yet millions of people believe them, and they say you can't trust the New York Times or the San Francisco Chronicle or the Associated Press, which is ridiculous. But it doesn't matter that it's ridiculous. It matters that that's the attitude Donald has gotten many people to buy into. I don't think we'll see significant change politically until a couple of things happen. You can expect within about 2 years you're going to see a national TV show with some single mother, maybe widowed or divorced, who says, well, my 76-year-old mother has been taking care of my children so I can work three jobs. And her insulin was $25 a month under Joe Biden, and now it's $1,000 a month, and her Social Security check's only $900. And she's going to die soon for lack of insulin. Or the same sort of mother saying, you know, my little daughter Sally here has a curable form of cancer, but I made $50 too much money last year, so I've been kicked out of Medicaid, and now she's going to die. Those kinds of stories, which are going to be out there if the budget plan of the Trumpers succeeds, those may begin to turn more human hearts, but a lot more people have to wake up to what's going on. You know, every day I get videos saying, yeah, Donald Trump, we need him as a dictator. This country needs a dictator. You know, democracy, that's just for the liberals. And that's a terrifying thought. I mean, think of all of the people who embrace neo-Nazism, you know, We fought a war to defeat Nazism and all of its evils, and yet we have people embracing it, including if you see the postings that have been made public by the guy who shot the two Democratic lawmakers, killing one of them and the spouse of one of them. This is a terrible development in this country, and it says something very deeply, on a very deep moral level, has gone wrong in our society.
David, since you brought up the media, is there any way to know what percentage of the population gets their news from those outlets you mentioned?
Because there's research about that, and there are scholars who published about this. It's a minority of people. I mean, Fox, for example, has the largest cable news audience, but it gets about 3 million viewers, right, which would be 1% of the population, or if you only want to count adults, it would be close to 2% of the population. So we know it's a relatively small number of people, but you know, a lot of people, even if they hear the news, they're not engaged in politics. It's not, they don't see it as important or relevant to their lives. That's why 90 million people didn't vote.
Right. Well, and to your point, Malcolm Ferguson with the New Republic was at the parade, and he interviewed some QAnon TikTok influencers who were there. And you know, we always wonder, is it even worth talking about this? But people do have these beliefs and these people vote. And they talked to him about, you know, sex trafficking pedophiles, Hillary Clinton drinking blood. What are your thoughts about how we should talk about this? Because gone down this rabbit hole and they do vote.
Well, I think those are relatively very small fringe elements in our society who, you know, think that Alex Jones tells his audience, interdimensional beings have taken over our leaders, but don't be afraid. At my show, InfoWars, we're on to exposing them. I think that's a very small segment of the public, but I think there's a very large segment of the public that does not think critically about what's happening and doesn't get the connections between policy issues and their everyday lives. And the reason we should be concerned about that is the last national literacy survey done in 2019, right ahead of the pandemic, found that the median reading level in America, that is half read above and half below, was the end of fifth grade. So we're talking about half of Americans read no better than an 11-year-old, and more than a fifth of Americans, a fifth, that's close to 70 million people, read at the level of third grade, which is 7 or 8 years old. And that should be deeply, deeply troubling to us. People with that level of reading skill simply lack the ability to connect in a meaningful way any complex public policy issues.
Hmm. Well, and that deserves so much more attention, David. And
yeah,
we just don't talk about that much.
To get people to pay attention to the lack of reading skills and its impact on public policy, and also to get a word back into our lexicon, and that is regard. The Trump administration has no regard for anyone who isn't a donor or putting money in Donald's pocket, and all of that is transactional. It's not based on any significant substance, just greed and bribery and extortion. But we need to have regard for our fellow citizens. That is just a basic moral principle. And how often do you hear a politician talk about regard for the other?
Right. Well, before we go to break, let's take another caller. Let's hear from Carol in Oakland. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. So I went to two rallies on Saturday. One was the Oakland Elders rally, and the other was the one in Berkeley over on the pedestrian overpass of the freeway. And both of them were really well attended. But one of the things that impressed me the most was all the people that were driving by honking. They were so enthusiastic. When I was on the freeway overpass, it seemed like at least half of the vehicles were honking in support of us, which So I personally knew several people who could not go to a rally because of other commitments. And so it made me feel like the numbers, you know, even though it was just 5 million, that it could have been a lot more because of, like I say, the enthusiastic support. The other thing I wanted to mention was just what we talked about with some of the people that I was around. And the biggest thing was how older Democrats are not moving on, not passing the baton on to younger Democrats, and are really out of touch with Democratic voters.
Mm-hmm. That is a really interesting point, Carol. I'll ask David to comment on that after a break. To your point about the numbers, Mary wrote in, the Alt National Park social media page says they have been doing the numbers and they're getting more on the order of over 11 million people. They said they've taken the numbers posted by each city, adding them up. There may be smaller assemblies that national media are missing, but the Alt organization deployed people everywhere. Thank you for that, Mary. And that's the other question, David, is how are cities, I mean, I look at California, New York, I mean, so many states, there were dots everywhere. Some cities had four protests in one city. So that's the other question, is how do we even come up with these numbers so quickly?
And many in red states, a huge turnout in red states.
Right.
What we're lacking is someone who people can coalesce around as a leader. Mm-hmm. I mean, look back at Ronald Reagan. Whether you like Ronald Reagan or you hate Ronald Reagan, it's indisputable he was a leader. He led the country out of the New Deal, which had created all the middle-class prosperity that we were enjoying, and into an era of top-down economics, because he persuaded people, you'll be better off if we cut taxes on the super rich and reduce regulations on business, and cut spending. And even though he was a huge spender, even though he raised taxes 11 times on the middle class, and other things that were contrary to the interests of the vast majority of Americans, people gave him an enormous victory when he ran for re-election in 84. That was a real landslide election. What the Democrats need is to find and develop a leader. And yes, somebody who's not my age or Bernie Sanders' age, somebody who's in their 40s or 50s and who can ignite and get people to pay attention. Because human beings are herd animals. Most of us simply go along. What did the experiments by Stanley Milgram and Philip Zimbardo showed? That 5 out of 6 people will do what they're told to do. And so you need leaders who can get people behind them and who can successfully counter what Trump and his friends are doing, which is, let's be very clear what they're doing. They're destroying the liberties of the people. They are taking away freedoms. They are putting us into a future in which we will all be worse off, except for those people who are getting richer because of the government through tax cuts and subsidies that I wrote the best-selling series of books explaining.
Mm. And Carol's question, David, about how it's time for Democrats who've been in office for decades, it's time for them to pass the torch.
Yep. No, I think that there's a real gerontocracy problem with the Democrats. It's just the realities of age. Nancy Pelosi did step aside as speaker, and I think she'll go down in history as the most effective, competent speaker so far in our American republic. But we need clearly to have a whole generation of younger people who are elected to office and who can address, you know, the terrible thing. Think about the different economics of, I'm a boomer, an early boomer, born in 48. I went through a period of terrific economic opportunity. My children, who were born in the late 60s up to 90, I have 8 of them. They were born in much, much more perilous economic times. And the students I now teach at RIT who were born in this century, my goodness, first 9/11, just before they were born, followed by the Great Recession, which by some measures did more damage than the Great Depression did 90 years ago. So, or not, almost 100 years ago now. So we need to have politics that reflect the concerns of people who are working age but not retirement age. And unfortunately, I haven't seen yet anybody rising to the kind of popular leadership position who can rally people behind them and prove to be a leader who people will get behind.
Well, thank you again for the call, Carol. Today, we're speaking with David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist and best-selling author of several books, many about Donald Trump, including The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family, and It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. David K. Johnston is co-founder of DCReport.org and professor of practice at the Rochester Institute of Technology. If you'd like to join us, if you'd like to share your thoughts about this political moment, if you were on the streets on Saturday, What did you see? What are you hearing from people in your community? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We have a couple of caregiving events coming up that we'd like to tell you about. This Saturday at our space at 220 Montgomery Street in San Francisco, it'll be a lengthy event with a number of incredible organizations talking about the services they offer, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., and I'll be sharing my caregiving story at about 1 p.m., Again, that's this Saturday, 220 Montgomery Street in San Francisco, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then Your Call will be doing a live caregiving show at the Maine Public Library in San Francisco on July 9th at 6 p.m. It'll be a live caregiving Your Call, San Francisco Public Library Maine branch in San Francisco, July 9th at 6 p.m. And you can find more information at kalw.org. Tomorrow, we will continue to discuss this political moment with Lisa Graves, author of the forthcoming book, Without Precedent, How Chief Justice Roberts and His Accomplices Rewrote the Constitution and Dismantled Our Rights. We hope you can join us for that. And then Wednesday, we're going to open the lines just to find out what you want from our show. Given that we have an hour, what do you want us to cover during these very surreal and frightening for so many political times because so much is at stake. If you'd like to join today's show with David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. David has covered Donald Trump for so many years. He knows him very well. So if you have any questions about Trump's endgame, why he's doing what he's doing, you know, what is his end game? David is the person to ask. So you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Let's go next to Dorothy in San Francisco. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. Wonderful show.
Thank you.
Okay. I live in a senior independent housing complex, and there were a goodly number of us who turned out to the demonstration. And I was talking with a couple of my neighbors afterwards. And, you know, a lot of us have been doing, doing demonstrations since, like, Vietnam, right? And my friend observed very happily that there were a lot of young people at this demonstration. And, you know, some of the demonstrations that we've been to in the past few years, it was more, mostly, people like us, sort of, as she observed, older white women. And this time it was everybody and, along with, all ages and ethnicities and so forth. And she was very happy to see all the young people turn out, and so was I. And so I thought I'd pass that on and encourage all the young people to, keep up the good work. It's nice to know we've got them coming up behind us.
That's a great story, Dorothy. Thank you. And I actually would love to have some older activists on because you all have just seen so much and you've done so much. And I often wonder, what are you all thinking about this moment, especially women who have fought for reproductive rights for decades? So thank you for all the work, and thank you for calling in. David, what about that? You know, Dorothy's talking about different generations that she's seen on the streets, especially so many young people.
We're seeing more young people this time around than in several recent demonstrations that have been held. But keep in mind, the reason there were so many young people in the Vietnam War demonstrations that I was out covering for the San Jose Mercury back then on the peninsula was because of the draft. If there had been a draft in place in 2003 when we invaded Iraq, there would have been a whole different tenor to the public response to this. And getting an all-volunteer army has filled heavily by people who don't have any economic opportunities unless they join the military, special education opportunities has been a very smart move by the Hawks to make us more bellicose. But we need to have a lot more people turning out in demonstrations. There are more than 50,000 registered Republicans in San Francisco. There were fewer than 50,000 people who turned out to demonstrate on Saturday. So there's plenty of resources to call upon and additional people who can be turned out to demonstrations. And the numbers need to be big enough that they put the fear of God or the fear of the voters into Trump and the people around him.
We have an email from Robin who says, it's great to hear today's broadcast, but since we have so much misinformation, can you please tell us where all the figures are for how many protested, how many voted? It would be helpful to know that we are getting trustworthy information. So the No Kings organizers are putting out that 5 million number. And then we heard earlier from Mary who mentioned the Alt National Park. So I believe this is people who used to work for national parks. I need to confirm that. But they said that it's 11 million. And then the voting information is just, this is what we got from, I'm looking at CNN. These are the official election presidential results. And then the 90 million people who did not vote, that's coming from a number of reports. But this is a really good question, David. A lot of people don't know what to trust anymore.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Well, this is a real fundamental problem, and AI is going to get more and more and more sophisticated. And AI is soulless. It's just like corporations. AI only reflects has no morals of its own, no integrity of its own, so it only reflects what the people who create it do or make possible. And as AI gets more sophisticated, the ability to trick people is going to get significantly greater. And we're seeing vast, quick improvements in AI just since the introduction of widely used tools like ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is a real problem. The sources that I've been citing for things like voter turnout come from looking up, you know, I looked up just before we went on the air, voter registration in San Francisco, for example. 8.6% of registered voters in San Francisco register as Republicans. But the crowd estimates are always problematic. Back in the late 60s or maybe about 1970, the Los Angeles Times put a whole team of reporters on estimating the crowd at the Rose Bowl, which every year you can, this January 1st, turn on your TV and watch, and you'll be told 1 million people turned out on Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena. And the LA Times showed that the maximum number of people who could have been on the parade route was 250,000. After doing, you know, work with a whole variety of scientists and getting maps and charts and spending a great deal of time and money, the next year, when the story ran on the front page, it began by saying more than 1 million people turned out yesterday for the Rose Bowl. So be skeptical of crowd numbers. Mm-hmm. What you want to notice is that there were lots of empty seats around Donald Trump and very thin lines at his birthday parade, compared to the enormous crowds in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, Philadelphia, and other places.
Right. Well, and one more question before we get back to calls. I was just curious to find out what you've been writing about, what you've been up to lately. And I noticed that you're going on quite a few popular YouTube shows. And these shows are reaching thousands of people. This has been fascinating to watch, David, over the past, say 5 or so years. So many people have YouTube shows. A lot of us have never heard of them, but they're reaching tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. And a lot of them are really good shows. So what are your thoughts on these kinds of changes that you're seeing in the media? And what's your experience been like going on these shows?
Well, you're right. I've been doing a lot more podcasts and videocasts from people I never heard of, because I want to reach as broad an audience as possible. And while I'm not very often on CNN and MSNBC anymore, I used to be on those 2-3 times a week. Almost every day I'm on overseas television, Britain, the Middle East especially, those two places. I think that having these many, many different voices out there, even if they're small audiences, is a good development, that having a widespread set of sources are important. And I'll also tell you that a number of the hosts are utterly incompetent questioners, because there's a skill to asking questions and to answering them. But nonetheless, you know, I pretty much go on anybody's show who asks me once. If I go on again, it's sort of a function of how good you were as a host. And good to me means competent in asking questions.
Well, okay, thank you, because you've come on our show many, many times.
Many times, and happy to come anytime, Rose.
Thank you. We actually have an email from Mark who says, I cannot thank you enough for having David as a guest. Can't have him on enough. He's a national treasure. I just wonder, David, people are being pulled in so many different directions. And I do love that there are lots of sources, but you also want people to have the same set of facts and to know what is happening. That's what concerns me, is that we're all living in different worlds because we're getting our information from so many different sources.
Right. And part of the strategy of Donald Trump, his minister of hate, Stephen Miller, and others, is to have so many things going on that you can't keep track of them all, and then to sow confusion about what's happening. So what's important, I think, for people to do is keep focused on the key issue here. Do you want to live under a dictator who's going to tell you you cannot speak certain words, who's going to remove images of Congressional Medal of Honor winning soldiers because they were Black or Latino or a woman? Or do you want to be a free people? And that's what needs to be focused on, because the object of what Trump is doing is to be America's first dictator. And all the rest of it is simply filigree. You know, I'm reminded of one of the great rabbis who said that the essence of the message from God is to love everyone else and treat them as you would treat yourself. Now, go study. That's the key thing that matters, and that's what we need to keep track of. Keeping the republic that has provided us with individual liberty imperfectly for sure, and to go back to work on expanding the freedom and opportunities of people and holding others in regard, not taking away, punishing, imposing what the dictator wants.
We have a question from Mark. How does David account for what seems to be the difference in major media reporting on events such as Saturday's demonstrations versus, for example, the Tea Party protests against Obama? Saturday disappeared quickly in the New York Times. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I think that what you're seeing is just appalling on that level. And I'm in a group of former New York Times people, a private discussion group, and many of us are highly critical of the paper and its coverage. During the years I worked for the Times, if I quoted someone from a place like the Heritage Foundation or Cato, I was never asked to establish their bona fides. But if I was quoting some group affiliated with the left of center in any way, I had to answer questions about, well, why should we trust these people? And that's because the major news organizations are establishment institutions. And so they very much have a built-in perception and bias about that. In the same way, by the way, that there was a blip in the stock market where prices fell not long after I joined the New York Times in the 1990s. And we had a big meeting of the business staff, and they were assigning stories to people. And I said, excuse me, and interrupted the meeting. And I said, hey, prices just fell. I'm a buyer of mutual funds. This is a huge opportunity because they're cheaper now. And the business editor pointed to someone else and said, I want a story on that. And then they went right back to, oh, a drop in the stock market's a terrible thing. The news organizations certainly have viewpoints about things in terms of what's important and how much attention they get. I think these demonstrations should have gotten vastly more attention than they did. And I think there was way too little coverage in the Tea Party era of how the Tea Party was really an AstroTurf outfit funded by the Koch brothers. And if you go watch the HBO show from some years ago starring Jeff Daniels called Newsroom, The first, second, third episode, one of them has a brilliant segment about this very issue of Tea Party leaders who had no idea that the Koch brothers were paying the bills.
Wow. Well, thank you for the question. And to your point, the protests are not on the page, the front page of today's New York Times. We have another email, and then we'll take a few calls, and then we'll get David's response. Matthew writes, I was raised Republican in a very conservative, affluent Chicago suburb. Trump and MAGA are not what traditional Republicans or conservatives are about. I have not voted Republican for years. I've never been to a protest, but I was looking forward to joining this one, my first. I had old childhood friends asking each other which protest around the country they were planning to attend. None of us have attended protests, but we cannot abide this regime. I'm happy to pay taxes. I'm angry about a regime using my tax dollars to separate innocent families. I'm angry that the tax dollars, which I'm proudest to pay to USAID to save dying children from curable diseases around the world, are being pulled back so those tax dollars can instead be used to send Marines into LA for a political stunt. This is not what our tax dollars are for. I'd love for an expert to break down one of my tax dollars and describe how it's being used. If we do that, I think more people will come out to protest. Wow. Thank you, Matthew. David, this is what a message. Matthew, well, raised in a conservative family. He's never gone to a protest.
Yeah, that's not unusual. Most people have never been to a protest. The $1 idea, however, is very, very important. Billions and trillions don't mean anything to people. And I and many other journalists and public policy people have put out charts showing here's your dollar and how is it spent, you know. And Paul Krugman once said quite smartly that the U.S. government today basically is an enormous pension and health care plan, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security with an army. Because that's the overwhelming majority of the money that's being spent. The phony DOGE department, because only Congress can create a department, cuts. I think at the end of the day, we're going to find out that they cost money. They didn't save a single penny. What they did do was terrify a lot of people and cause a lot of people to walk away because they just couldn't stand up to the menacing nature of the Trump administration and the thugs that it sent out into the agencies.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Matthew. We will definitely do a show on this, and we will also do a show about USAID. So thanks for the message. Gosh, we've got a number of callers who've been waiting patiently. Let's just take a few quickly. We're almost out of time, so if you can keep your comments brief, we would appreciate it. Jonathan in Berkeley, thank you for holding.
Hello. Good morning, Rose. Hello, David. I wonder if David could comment on the issue of leadership again. What Trump was able to do, no other defeated candidate has ever been able to do, as far as I know, and that is to stay in a position of authority within the party, even after having lost the election. And he removed significant people from validity by just going on and on about his own particular grievances. So, you know, he found a way to take over the party that other leaders haven't been able to do.
This is a good one. We were talking about this recently, about how he gets so many Republicans to fall in line. And David, it's important to always talk about how people are afraid. A Vox headline from last January, how death threats get Republicans to fall in line behind Trump. What are your thoughts?
Any politician who is worried that they will be voted out in a primary if they stand up to Donald Trump is unworthy of your vote. And we should shame these people publicly. We should call them what they are, which is cowards and quislings. More than a million people died for this country. I'm the son of a 100% disabled veteran of World War II, which by law makes me a war orphan. And I have no tolerance for people who put their reelection ahead of their oath to the Constitution. And by the way, to Jonathan, look up Grover Cleveland. He's the only other person who had a break between two terms.
Well, thank you for that call, Jonathan. David, we don't have time for all the other calls and emails.
Yeah.
I just wonder, what are your thoughts here? Because it's hard to keep up with a lot of this. I am thinking always about the most vulnerable in our society who are, like you said, are going to lose their health care, are struggling to make ends meet, and under Trump, things are just going to get harder. So how are you deciding where to really focus on? What would you say to listeners who feel very overwhelmed because so much is happening?
The most important thing is to register and get people to the polls, not just in California, which is heavily blue, but all across the country. We have not yet lost our democracy, but we can lose it very easily. And we need to stand up and be brave. And if you're not brave enough to be in the front of the line, then get behind people who are. You don't have to put yourself at so much risk, but get other people behind them. If you're older, if you're retired, you're no longer constrained by concerns about my employer might be pressured to get rid of me. But, you know, be brave. More than a million people died for this country. If you can't get off your keister and act and donate money and give of your time to save our republic, then you're going to get what you deserve, which is you're going to live in a dictatorship run by a literally crazy man who is a career criminal.
And David, 30 seconds. When you say lose our democracy, what does that mean to you?
That means we will become a full dictatorship. I mean, we live right now in a dictatorship. Trump is still consolidating his power. He hasn't replaced all the top generals and admirals with loyalists. That would be the most single worst thing he can do. He has not managed to get through the law that will make the courts irrelevant. That's part of his big, ugly bill. But that's what he's working on, consolidating his absolute power. That has always been Donald's intent. Donald sincerely believes that he is the only person who can be leader of the country and the world. I've been saying that for at least 14 years, and he himself said it last month to The Atlantic. I run the country and the whole world, and he wants you, unless you agree with him, to shut up and go away. Mm.
David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist, best-selling author of many books, co-founder of DCReport.org, and professor of practice at the Rochester Institute of Technology. Thank you so much for joining us, David. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you, Rose. Anytime.
Thank you. And we will continue this discussion tomorrow, so please call in again. And I do have your emails that we haven't gotten to. I will definitely read those tomorrow. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.